It is the Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network. Dr. Scott Bembenek is back with us today. Now, we really enjoyed our last conversation with Dr. Bembenek. He's got a PhD in theoretical chemical physics and works as a computational chemist at Johnson & Johnson, sent out on the mission to make science interesting again, but not just to the science-minded, the rest of us, right? Remember the first time you got a look at a Bunsen burner, and you're like, whoa, this has got to be cool. Look at that stuff boiling in there. Or I remember the day they said, we're going to dissect a frog. And people ran out of the room, went nuts. And I was like, where's the frog? Oh, wow. Then they brought in the fetal pig. So, you know, there were those days where we were literally wowed by science. And now sometimes when we say science, they think, oh, well, it's just, you know, a bunch of abstract stuff, the light years away. I mean, it's not as exciting. Well, nothing could be farther from the truth. Dr. Scott Bembenek is back with us today on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Dr. Bembenek, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Ed. I'm glad to be back. We had a great time talking about science before, so thanks for bringing me back.
Oh, big time. Well, I'm still a guy who gets wowed. Right? The wow factor in science has been there for me as a kid. I still find it. What are the wows to you as you look forward to 2018? Either we're on a precipice of something, or something has begun, or you see something in the offing that you see more clearly. What gets you excited at the beginning of this year about science?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of things that we could talk forever, right? But I mean, so a big area of expertise for me, so like you said, I'm a theoretical chemical physicist, and I work in drug discovery research. So I'm trying to come up with new therapies for a variety of different diseases like cancer and, you know, all these different things. So in drug discovery research, I worked as a computational chemist, and I'm trying to build computer models and come up with new algorithms and that to make this whole process better. So I'm very excited about this area of research, and I think it's going to continue to get even more exciting. It's going to have more and more impact.
This excitement,
for example,
oh, I was going to say, right,
yeah, no,
give
I,
us an example. Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so for example, think about, I mean, I think at this point we're all familiar with, you know, big data, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. And, of course, we have this in drug discovery. You know, who doesn't have this? You know, and there's been a lot of promises made, and I think there's actually been some good impact. And drug discovery, you know, this is still pretty up and coming. I think 2017 saw some very nice applications of these types of approaches, but it's still very up and coming. What I work on myself is kind of a different set of algorithms and computer approaches, and we call these physically based models. So this is actually getting to the nitty-gritty of what is it about a molecule, the chemistry and the physics of a molecule that turns it into a drug. You know, what does it take to make that transition from garden variety molecule to drug? And so I go to the computer and I try to, you know, do a bunch of calculations and all these types of things and build these physical models and understand this at a very high level of detail. And, you know, these types of approaches have been around for, you know, quite a while, and they've had some major impact. But I think we're going to really see this area take off. And I think what you're going to start to see is you're going to see kind of the best of both worlds, where you have a hybrid between these machine learning type of algorithms and the big data approach, in conjunction with these more physically based models, which kind of get to the nitty-gritty details of the chemistry and physics.
Interesting. Now, I have two questions immediately on behalf of our listeners, right? Looking from the layman's point of view. The first one is, when the algorithm is mentioned so often today, is for you, yes, the benefit of the algorithm that it runs episodes and you can expedite what the experience is going to be by replicating conditions, and that pattern or that narrative that they add up to is extremely valuable and gets to you more efficiently than if people had to go through all of this? Am I onto it? I mean, I'm trying to make sense of what
Let me break it down. So, yeah, let's start with some of the major challenges in drug discovery, and then I think that'll answer your question. I can put it into a context for you. So, I mean, think about it. It takes 15 plus years from start to finish to get a drug out, okay? That's a long time. And that process is not getting faster. It's taking longer and longer. You know, and as part of that process, you know, you're going to make some 5,000 to 10,000 molecules. The chemists are. They're going to go to a lab. They're going to do, the things that they do, and they're going to make, this is just for a single target, a single indication, you know, consider a specific type of cancer, for example. They'll make 5 to 10,000 compounds. Say under five will actually move forward in clinical trials. 5 or 7 years will go by, and then a total of 15 years. And you know what? The failure rate is some 90%.
Aye.
I mean, that's staggering, right?
And it is.
You know, I don't want to get into the money factor, but it's a lot. No one agrees on what it is, but you're talking, you know, probably over $2 billion for this. And that cost is doubling every 9 years. So even though our technologies are getting better, the cost isn't coming down. And that's actually a little bit unusual for, you know, technology fields.
Right.
And so what I try to do as a computational chemist, I want to shorten that timeline. Okay, I don't want the early R&D to take 5 to 7 years. I don't want 5 to 10,000 molecules being made. I want to really figure out, I want to teach the algorithm, you know, to really, you know, let's get that down to maybe hundreds of molecules, or maybe tens of hundreds, you know, 10, 50, 100. I'd like to get it down. 5 to 10,000 molecules is a lot. And 5 to 7 years and a total of 15 years, that's a long time. And like I said, a lot of money is being spent. And so as a computational chemist in drug discovery, I'm trying to shorten that timeline and really hone in on the molecules that really need to be made early on.
Got it. Now, is the knack for what you do creating the right equation that expresses this so that you can get the benefit of the computation? What is it that computation does to accelerate you having a good outcome?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a variety of different approaches. I mean, a big part of it is, you know, you can go and you can look at all the drugs on the market, and you can try to understand in a meaningful way, what is it about those molecules that made them drugs as opposed to these other ones that didn't make them drugs, you know? And this gets really tricky because sometimes they look very similar. And so a part of the algorithm or the equation, as you say, is really trying to dissect the difference between these things and looking at the, you know, you're really looking at the atomic detail. You know, what is it about this molecule, the way that the, you know, the atoms that it has and the way these atoms are actually put together, bonded together to make this full molecule. What is it about this one that made it a drug as opposed to this one that didn't? And you can do these very sophisticated calculations. You know, we do things, you know, with quantum mechanics. We do quantum calculations where we can really understand, you know, what does this molecule look like in three dimensions?
Right.
You know, what is it actually? Obviously, we can't see this with our eye, but on the computer, you can, you know, calculate a three-dimensional structure of this molecule and get a sense of how it actually looks as opposed to, you know, when you just draw it on a piece of paper. And so these types of approaches can be, you know, extremely enabling.
You know, earlier today, we were talking with a nutrition-based person, and she was saying it's only in the past several years that doctors, scientists are appreciating the value of the gut. Now, you know, leaky gut has been kicked around, you know, in parlance and conversation. But she was saying that it's relatively recent that we understand that neurotransmitters are actually created in the gut, sent up to the brain to do their job. And I was appalled at this. I said, how could it be so slow in understanding this? So you're a great person to ask. The pace with which we have connective understanding like that from the gut up to the brain, is it as slow as it seems?
Well, you know, to be fair, I mean, you're talking about, so that kind of goes into the biology of drug discovery. I mean, we've made some amazing strides, but, you know, it's very difficult to really flesh out these details. You know, you're not just understanding like your target of interest, you know. You're trying to understand a whole biological pathway. And then when you understand that biological pathway, you're trying to understand how this biological pathway connects to these other biological pathways. And it's very amazing that we understand what we do. And I think it can seem slow, but I think we're making some amazing progress. It's very challenging to understand this full biology, the full pathways. And then once you have a handle on your pathway of interest, which includes not just the protein target that you're interested in, it's all these other ones that interact with it. See, this is what makes it complicated, is you're thinking, you know, when we think about drug discovery, we're thinking about a small molecule that will hit a specific protein in your body. But that's a very closed-minded view because you have all these other proteins that the molecule will interact with. That's where we get side effects.
Right.
You'll have all these other proteins that your protein target interact with, and they make up this whole biological pathway. So that alone is very challenging. And now to connect it to other pathways, or like you say, trying to connect the gut to the effects that it may have on the brain and other parts, it's a pretty tall order.
Well, you know, it is, right? So I'll ask it this way. Has anyone ever said, we're going to map the human body for every single thing we know as of now, and every time we find something, we're going to add it? So this will be the state of which we know, and this will be public information, cannot become proprietary, and this will accelerate the public's understanding, research, etc. It is hard for the public to understand that we might still not know what everything in the body does. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah, because we're going driverless cars. You know, driverless cars, cryptocurrency, I don't need. Do I need a cancer cure? Yes. Do I need an Alzheimer's cure? Yes. So what slows down? You know, Bill Gates did a great thing a few months back, big initiative on Alzheimer's. We were lucky the very next day one of our researcher guests has applied for that. So it's, oh, man, that's exciting. But it does seem like, man, we really fell behind in allowing these massive human killers to get way ahead of the game, and we are trying to play catch-up as fast as we can. Are we close to knowing what we need to know about the human body, or we are way off from there?
No, I wouldn't say we're way off. I think that we actually know a lot. I mean, you're making some good points, and you touched on several topics. I think, the short answer is we know a lot, and we're learning more and more. I'm actually impressed with how much we do know. I think a lot of it gets down to, think about it. I mean, you have the human body, and you're really trying to understand all the molecular and atomic details of what's going on, all these interactions. That's challenging. Think about it. It's one thing just to try to take a single molecule, a neurotransmitter, like you say, in your body, and understand that in itself, and then understand what it does in your body. But now think of all the millions and billions of these types of molecules in your body, and all the big molecules like the proteins, and then your immune system has all these antibodies in that, and the way they interact. You know, it's so, in short, I think we're doing an amazing job. I think there's just a lot of challenges out there, and we just need to keep rising to the occasion.
Sure. No, I certainly understand that. But you know what the kids always say in the back, are we there yet? When are we getting there?
Sure.
So am I there in 5 years, 1 year, 50 years, 150? Which is it, Dad? You want to say,
no, I hear you.
I don't have a clue. I'll ask Dr. Bembenek when he's on the show next week. So,
all right. We're running out of time, but let me tell you, so I'm excited about, so let's go back to cancer. Everybody's concerned about cancer, right? I think there's been some amazing things coming up, some amazing treatments, like the antibody treatments I'm sure you're familiar with. I mean, those are amazing, the way that they can really hone in and help the immune system target the cancer. That's very exciting work.
Right.
I mean, I'm excited by that. There's another one, and I want to tell you about this, is that, so this whole idea of using your own immune system to help you fight the cancer better, so either work harder or smarter.
Right.
The newest area of research, they call it immunotherapy type treatments for cancer. It's very exciting. And one of the most exciting ones there is we have these T-cell therapies. So listen to what they do here, because you asked me, how much do we know and how good are we getting?
Right.
So T cells are cells that you have, they're immune cells in your body, and they fight infection. And they fight things, of course, infection and things like cancer. That's their job. But we're at the point now where we can actually, from patient's blood, we can extract out these T cells and we can re-engineer them in the lab. So you're talking about at the molecular atomic level, re-engineer them. And then we can grow them in magnitude in lab. You get a whole bunch of these guys, these re-engineered T cells. We can inject them back into the patient. And why do we do this? Because now they're even better and smarter at recognizing the cancer cell,
right,
and targeting it and destroying it. So I think, to help answer the question, I think we need to think about some of these therapies. Now, this therapy isn't, out yet, except from it's in clinical trials. But I think you're going to see there were some amazing discoveries last year with regards to this. And I think you're going to see this area grow and grow. I don't know if we're going to see, primetime treatments out yet, but very up and coming. I mean, this research is amazing. I mean, it's just the idea to basically make your immune system, work with your immune system, make it better and smarter. It's a very novel idea. You know, we're, it I think is. We're getting this is smarter the, about our approaches. Right?
Yeah, this is the reverse engineer theory, where if the body can turn on the cancer reproduction, obviously there's a switch that turns it off, right?
That's part of it, right. And there's also, and we recognize now that, you know, we can target very specifically certain types of cancers and cancer cells, that they produce a certain type of protein. And that kind of, that opens them up to being tagged, if you will, by things like antibodies. And once they're tagged in this way by these antibody treatments, for example, then your body can better see it and better fight it. Or if you have something like these T-cell therapies where you take an actual immune cell and you make it smarter by engineering, redesigning it, if you will, in the lab. I mean, this is amazing because, and to appreciate this, think about the current therapies. We're all very familiar with radiation and chemotherapies. Those aren't going to go away. They're actually getting better too. But, you know, think about the chemotherapies, the idea where you use now a small molecule, you know, classic small molecule type drug discovery approach. And this molecule goes in, and this molecule by itself alone is going to go ahead and target the cancer. You know, this idea of using your immune system, that's a very novel approach.
Right.
That's engaging something that's natural to you.
Right.
As opposed to putting, you know, putting the job, the burden of it all on a small molecule to go in there and do it. There's nothing wrong with that. We've been doing it for years, and these are great treatments. But for cancer, you know, we need better approaches, more sophisticated approaches, and they're coming. You know, so when you ask me, are we there yet? We're not there yet. You know, there's always more challenges, but the way we're thinking and the things we're learning, it's amazing.
It is amazing. And you know what? It has remained that way for people like me. I've been watching this their whole lives. I mean, you know, if it wasn't for public broadcasting, I don't know what we would have learned on this level when I was a kid. But today, you have sources everywhere, which is exciting. So let's talk about one. Your book is called The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe and the Story Behind It. Boy, that sounds like a very ambitious title. You must have loved the writing of it. Why did you write the book? Was it the right time, or did you want to catch up with the story that it tells? What made the writing of the book urgent when you wrote it?
That's a great question. I started this back in at the end of 2009. I had a conversation with a friend. She had just read a popular science book. She was super excited about what she read. She actually had no background in science, so was actually amazed that she actually understood a lot about the book that she had read, and she also was just super excited. And I started thinking, wow, I mean, that's a whole other audience that I don't, you know, engage with. You know, I talk to other scientists, and you know, my day job is talking to other scientists. I write scientific publications and give scientific talks. But I got really excited during that time about, you know, what could you do if you wrote a popular science type book and you made this material, in particular chemistry and physics, which is really my area of passion. If you made that available to a wider audience, you know, what could you teach them? What could they learn? Because like you say, information should be available to everybody in an understandable way. And, you know, science is exciting. What's not exciting is the presentation, you know? And so that was a challenge for me, as I felt, I don't know, like you ask, I felt a certain urgency that I really wanted to do this, right? Something that people got excited about, something that could really educate people about chemistry and physics. And I shaped it into a story, you know, so I use a lot of the history at the time of the discoveries. I talk a lot about the scientists themselves because it's a real human story. I mean, this is a story of discovery, you know, struggles, successes, and failures. And so I try to really cover that in the book so that you can feel it, so that, you know, I think if people can connect to the scientists and realize in a lot of ways they're just like you and me, I think that makes a difference. I think oftentimes science and scientists are set far apart from everybody else, and it shouldn't be that way.
You know, absolutely.
These are guys and women. They're just very passionate about what they're doing. It happens to be science, you know. I think we all can relate to having a passion in general.
Oh, for sure. Now, what is the cosmic machine that you're referring to?
Well, I'm talking about the universe, you know, and so I'm talking about that this is really the chemistry and physics, kind of the main areas of chemistry and physics. I touch on energy, entropy, atoms, and of course quantum mechanics. I consider these some of the foundational areas of chemistry and physics, and that these are kind of the underpinnings of the universe, or the cosmic machine, if you will.
Do we now for sure know, by looking at the universe, how it came about? Because I love these documentaries. I watched one recently, I think it was 8 hours, of the story of universe. Yeah, I mean, 8 hours of TV, it's a lot. And, you know, you go back, you know, you watch them on the streaming thing, so you can go back over it. So I really took it seriously, and I was like, wow, this sounds like we've got this down now. And then I say to myself, you know, a day or so later, it's like, all right, take it easy. You know, you were sitting there for a singular presentation. You've got to remember, you know, there's more to it than you saw, et cetera. So how certain are we about the formation of the universe, and how valuable is knowing that for certain to us right now at this point in time?
Right. I mean, that's a great question. I think the short answer is, I think we know a lot. You know, we always talk about the Big Bang, and that was kind of the beginning of everything, including time. Everything kind of expanded out, and then you have gravity kind of reorganize things and create the universe that we know. I think that in general, we have a good sense of that. I think that, you know, but we continue to learn more and more. I think the short answer is yes, we know quite a bit, but we continue to learn more and more. I mean, look at the last year detection of the gravitational waves. I mean, that was exciting.
Exactly. Right. That's what I mean. So
this is amazing stuff.
This is it. Know? Yeah. And that's the thing I think we worry about. See, gee, if it's not amazing, are they going to take it down in 10 years? Are they going to say we might have had that wrong? Because we long to understand this just as humans. But it seems to me, from especially the work that you do, this is at the central core of making progress. Your feet have to be firm on what you do know, to be intelligent in your inquiry about what you don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Right, I think that's exactly right. I think a good scientist, you know, they admit that, you know, we know this much, we're certain about this much. You know, when they say that, what they mean is that we have theory and experiment agreeing well with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my definition of what a good science does. You know, I think that we have a lot of exotic theories out there, and we don't have the experimental evidence for some of these things. You know, maybe it's up and coming, and you have to be open-minded, and maybe some of it's just, you know, it's exotic. But I think that when you talk to the scientists I know, they're really talking about, you know, the things that we feel most certain about. Those are the things that there was a theory and experimental evidence to back them together, and so that we can now move forward and learn more stuff.
Oh, man. I could keep you on all day. You're probably like, oh, my God, Ed, don't. But I love asking you questions.
I always love talking to you. Your enthusiasm is great. I love it.
Well, you're one of the reasons, because I'll tell you what, when you do what you do, you get the rest of us going. And we want to take this journey with you. I thank you so much for the time today. It goes by so quickly. I really look forward to the next time we get together, because this is one of the great areas. There's always something new. It doesn't matter what season it is. It doesn't matter. It'll pop. You'll go, wow. And then we're off to the races. Dr. Scott Benbenek, the book is The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe and the Story Behind It, available on Amazon. Also, check out Scott's website, scottbembenek.com. I'll spell that for you. S-C-O-T-T for the Scott part. Benbenek is the way it sounds. B-E-M-B-E-N. E-K, scottbembenek.com, and you can reach him on Twitter as well. See, there you go. A guy who's a scientist tweeting, this is awesome. See, this is the kind of accessibility we never had.
You know, reach out to me if you have questions, because I love talking about science.
You're the man. I mean, honestly, we just never were comfortable even bothering a scientist when I was young. Don't even interrupt him. He's walking down the hall. He's got something on that clipboard. Don't mess with it. Thank you. Thanks for being our scientist and a great interview on the show today, Scott.
Oh, thanks a lot, Ed. I appreciate it. The pleasure's all mine.
You got it. Scott Benbenek, everybody. Dr. Scott Benbenek, God, wouldn't you love to say that you did this, is a theoretical chemical physics PhD. Wow. Works as a computational chemist at one of the best companies in the history of science, Johnson & Johnson. And the book, you got to read this, The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe and the Story Behind It. Great segment. It's the Ed Till Show. This is what we do, okay? While everybody else is yelling about Trump, we are dealing with subjects that matter to you and me in our daily lives, right? The discovery of new medicines and therapies that come from computer models and algorithms. Awesome. Dr. Scott Bembenek on the Ed Till Show. AM/FM stations all across America. We're going to break away for your local news, weather, traffic, and sports. And we're coming up on the close on Wall Street. You'll get the latest numbers there.